We are with the birth and childhood of the flame, and Sri Aurobindo is revealing to us the moods of nature. Nature is greeting the divine advent. And it is only natural that the Divine Mother would choose the season of spring, because she brings hope. She brings the richness that is inherent in creation. She brings with her the joyous mood. So all nature responded. It responds first. At one place the mother says that it's quite likely that the simple ones will be responding much faster than those of us with a very complicated mind. So mind has created a lot of problems. The straight response is missing. Nature immediately recognizes the divine tread. But the moment mind is born, it starts creating, he or she looks the same, two eyes, one mouth, one nose, two ears. What is divine about it? Because we have lost that inner sense, the psychic sense. But nature has in it that spirit with which it can recognize, and it is rejoicing at the advent. We are on page 352. The life of the enchanted globe became a storm of sweetness and of light and song. What a expression. This is a storm of sweetness. So that's how earth rejoices. A revel of color and of ecstasy, a hymn of rays, a litany of cries, a strain of choral priestly music sang, and swung on the swaying censer of the trees. Actually, this is what is called Kavi Krita. That's how the Vedas speak of the poet. Poet is not just somebody who describes. Poet is someone who creates. Now, when one reads Sri Aurobindo's writings, I mean, we all have experienced spring, I'm sure, with all its beauty and grandeur. But when you read spring, spring appears more beautiful than what probably we experience it normally. Because he reveals to us the spirit of spring and all its richness. Very often spring season passes, we don't notice a single sound. Sometimes we have to strain our ears for the quail. Most of the time we only hear the crow. But here is Sri Aurobindo revealing to us all the richness and beauty of spring. He creates spring before us. And that is his beauty. Same thing in Ilion, Baji Prabhu, some of his poems, that the image of what is happening comes so close to you that if at all one were to ever picturize it, that will appear gross. This is amazing, because the poet directly touches the inner being, and then the inner being, with the help of the mind, conjures the image, which is a far more powerful medium. That's why probably in ancient time we don't hear so much of cinema. Cinema distorts it because it supplies an image. Now we get glued to an image, and that also creates a problem. For instance, now there is a serial which has started, Savitri. It's actually an adaptation of the ancient tale in modern times. So this has started just this month, and Savitri is shown in a modern dress and all. But a girl who has grown up in a Christian monastery, and her would-be husband, they have just introduced, is Satyavan. So basically they have taken the same tale, and she has to finish some unfinished story of the past, and the man is threatened by the being of death. They have taken up 100% the same story, but given it a very modern adaptation. But the problem of this medium is that on one side, it is true, it's a very powerful medium, but it makes you very dull and passive. You are glued to that. But the poet doesn't do that. He plays with your inner being and allows it to create your own image. It's like when you read the Gita and have the image of Vishwaroop when you are reading it, and when the television serial Mahabharat, you are shown Vishwaroop with the dang, dang music coming and all those heads coming, you lose that joy. For some it may be needed, but this is the power of the poet, that he creates in us that image of spring, which is unparalleled. Maybe next time we will notice it a lot more. A sacrifice of perfume filled the hours. So he is revealing not just the external, but the inner spirit. So normally, of course, what lovely colors. But these are colors and smells. But when we look at that, these smells are nothing but earth and nature. They are offering it like incense to the Supreme. After all, these are the perfumes that eventually find their way in the Agarbattis. They are perfumes drawn from nature. But how does nature do it? In its original form, when it is happy, when it is in a mood to offer itself to heavens. So it performs yajna, and in that yajna it lights incense of many, many colors, and they are pure. A sacrifice of perfume filled the hours. Ashokas burned in crimson spots of flame. Mother has given a lovely name to Ashoka trees. It's without grief. Just the name is literally, you know, it means that. And all its flowers, its bloom, its leaves, everything. Shobindo describes that they are like flames which are burning. Pure like the breath of an unstained desire. That's why it is without grief. Because it's a desire which is not sullied with all our human expectations, hopes and despairs which come along with it. So it's a pure desire. White jasmines haunted the enamored air. Pale mango blossoms fed the liquid voice of the love-maddened quail, and the brown bee muttered in fragrance mid the honey buds. This is our Lord. Not just a world-shunning ascetic withdrawn in some room with no idea of life. He is experienced life with much greater richness. Thus only he could give us that experience. Otherwise, who could write not only the voice of the quail, but she is fed on the mango, which has given the sweetness of the mango, has given a sweetness to her voice. Look at the perfection of the whole thing. The pale blossomed mango feeding the liquid voice of the love maddened quail. I mean, we all have heard quail, but to feel in her heart the stir of love and to feel in her voice at once the sweetness of the mango, the sweetness of nature which has gone into her voice. Only he could do it. And the brown bee muttered in fragrance mid the honey buds. This sunlight was a great god's golden smile. It is not like Prachanda Agni burning in the firmaments, shedding its grandiose rays which human beings can't bear. It has become a golden god's smile. It's a temperate smile. In spring, sun is fine. One can bear its touch. One likes its touch. All nature was at beauty's festival. This is the moment chosen by the divine for her advent. In this high signal moment of the gods. So this is a moment of the gods. Divine chooses his time for a particular event. Several places this comes in Savitri, that the fated hour, the chosen moment, auspice of a sacred hour. So time and the timeless, they play with each other. Even in the Gita it is mentioned, and Sri Aurobindo confirms it in the essays on the Gita, that even during day and night, there are moments of the gods and there are moments of the night. So at night, the hostile forces are very active. That's why people who keep awake at night, late night, of course not those who have to work, unfortunately, for various reasons, they are called as nishachar, which also meant simultaneously people who are awake at night, but also demons of the dark, nishachar. Those who are awake at night. Animals, many animals are awake at night because they can see better at night. They can hunt at night. It allows them to have a game of deception. So at night, there is the moment when darkness is deep. In the day, the gods are at an ascendant. The mother, if I am not mistaken, she was born at 10:15 a.m. in the morning on 21st February, though it was officially declared on 24th February. For some mysterious reason. It came into the register on 16th September 1893. Probably those days, that's how the system worked. But in the morning, before it's noon, it's a lovely moment. And I've heard, I don't know how far it is true, but I have my own twist to this story, that it was Vasant Panchmi day. Now, whether it was Vasant Panchmi or not, that is not so important. My twist is that the day when mother was born, from that year onwards, that is the Vasant Panchmi day. Because Saraswati is the goddess of Kali Yuga. She presides over Kali Yuga. It's the age of perfection. She is the youngest of all, most patient, most enduring, most persevering. And she adds details to everything, to wisdom, essential wisdom, which is seated above. She adds the perfection of knowledge in all the details in every sphere. To strength also she brings that roundedness, that perfection. To love and harmony and charm, everything, she brings perfection. And she is the goddess who presides over this age which is left behind, which we are leaving behind, and the age which is going to come. So it is quite understandable that she chooses a moment of the gods. Shobindo is born in a very interesting moment. Again, I am told that it was Janamashtami, whatever be the thing, August, when, as we have read, the earth was a quagmire, heaven a dismal block. So he literally comes representing the ascending element in humanity, in the thick of darkness, where one cannot see beyond the clouds. But he lifts his eyes, victory, to heaven. He sees beyond the clouds, reaches to the highest heavens to bring down that rain of God's bounty. And he sees in that quagmire and sees the lotus seeds which are going to bloom. So his birth is also a signal moment of the gods. And of course the mother's birth is a signal moment of the gods, when all the gods come together and choose an auspice hour for her to descend. And that is the purpose of celebrating these events, as the mother has said, that there is a cyclic movement in time and it tends to repeat itself. So therefore, this moment becomes special. Answering earth's yearning and her cry for bliss, a greatness from our other countries came. This we know in the Puranas, there is constantly this earth going to the Supreme, and the Supreme saying, I will come down, and comes down in a particular point of time in response to earth's yearning. And that adds to the delight of creation. When mother was asked that, why should we aspire? Meaning thereby that everything is already decided. Grace has decided when it will reveal itself to you. What will happen to your life? All the events, circumstances are laid out. What difference does it make whether you aspire or not, whether you pray or not? So the mother added a very, that of course there are many ways of looking at it, and mother has answered it in different perspective. But at one place she says, it adds to the delight. Your intensity adds to the delight. Because then when the divine touch comes, your whole being is thrilled. But if it happens without that, many times you don't even notice it. You miss that delight. It's like many times when grace saves us, but we don't know what was going to happen. We are not even grateful. Sometimes we go to a surgeon and he cuts and we are fine. We say, thank you very much. And thank you is with bundle of notes. But imagine a situation where we pray to the mother. Now, probably we were anyways going to be saved, because that's how it was foreseen. The surgeon was good or bad, doesn't matter. But then when we are saved and we say, Ma, I'm so grateful to you, it adds a delight. So this delight of meeting between the human ascending element and the descending element of the divine grace, that is the beauty of creation. All creation is about that. Otherwise, there is no need of creation. In creation, there is some possibility of delight which was missing. That's why creation came. Sri Aurobindo says that if the end has not to be greater than the origin, then it is superfluous. It makes no sense. So what is the beauty of creation? There is a delight of oneness which is already there. Divine is experiencing it. Probably in a human language, getting bored of it. So there is a creation. Now when there is a creation, what he experiences? The delight of union. And the most powerful, the greatest power that can make this union fast, solid, complete, smooth, is the power of love. So this love descend on earth in response to the human prayer. That makes it so beautiful. And that's what is revealed here in three lines. As we were saying, the last canto in Vision and the Boon, we have all the three secrets of the Gita. And the highest secret is the divine advent coming to redeem earth. So the mother has given tathastu that I will come down. And here she is, that is being revealed to us by the master poet, the divine poet. In this high signal moment of the gods, answering earth's yearning and her cry for bliss, a greatness from our other countries came. It was described, revealed to us in the previous canto. The bliss that the blind world forces seek. Blindly we are seeking her. At one place the mother says that the need of love in human heart is actually a need for a personal divine. Someone who can perfectly understand, perfectly love, perfectly respond. But actually this need can only be fulfilled by the divine or the divine element if you want to make it universal. Only that can fulfill a psychic response. So she is coming from the other countries. A silence in the noise of earthly things immutably revealed the secret word. A mightier influx filled the oblivious clay. A lamp was lit, a sacred image made. A silence mid the noise of things. It's something very concrete. The mother says that when, as a her younger age, when she was, peace was coming down and constantly in her being. So once two people were quarreling, a man and a woman. And she passed by their side. As she was passing, they became totally silent and started looking at her. This is the power of silence. Stopped quarreling. Of course, our effects are totally opposite. People are at peace. And when we go there, they start quarreling. That is a human, human side. But with the divine, she goes near and they stopped quarreling. So this silence she brings with her. And she brings with her a light to light this unlit temple of eternity. On the very first page of Savitri, we are told, night, this creation, it's like an unlit temple of eternity. She comes and lights the flame. She brings that light. A lamp was lit, a sacred image made. A mediating ray had touched the earth, bridging the gulf between man's mind and God's. This mediating ray, she says in one of her conversation when she was asked, she says, I have never left the earth since its inception. Whenever and wherever there was a possibility of light, of consciousness, I was there. And we know some of her past births, Mary Antoinette, Josephine, it seems Rani Lakshmibai, Joan of Arc, they all carried something of her element, spark inside her. And just as an aside, something very interesting and touching, how history can be so foolish because it tries to recreate something which it doesn't know. So about Queen Mary Antoinette, someone casually made some remark. You know, there is a very bad remark attributed to her that she, once when the people came to her seeking for bread because there was so much poverty, this is a remark attributed to her. She was guillotined, as we know. This is a remark attributed to her that she said, if they don't have bread, let them eat cake. It's a very, very insensitive remark. I mean, only somebody very insensitive could say that. And someone was casually talking about it in the ashram context and saying how bad she was. Now, later on, a lot of people talk about it that this was not her remark. She was a very great, much misunderstood queen of her time, like all greatnesses. So Nalnivada was present and he is reported to have said, admonish the person, saying, don't you know that mother herself, an aspect of her was in Mary Antoinette. Not talking of this life, quite some time back. This was the kind of, allegiance, loyalty, that admonish the person, that don't talk so loosely about someone in whom an aspect of the mother had manifested at one point of time. So this greatness has been coming down time to time, doing some work. But this time it has come with a very special work, entering into man's mind, because that's the highest station. It takes its brightness, linked our transience to the unknown. When mother was asked that why she chose France, she said, because I had to receive a special kind of education. And Nolida remarks about it very interestingly, that at that point of time, France was like the entire Renaissance was worked out, and the mind of France at that point of time was extremely developed, very subtle, very refined. And that mind could hold this ray, otherwise it was not possible. And therefore she shifted, the parent shifted. Literally she organized the events even before her coming. It's about a year before she was born that both the parents from Turkey and Egyptian descent, they shifted to France. And it enters into that mind of man, a brightness from the other countries, linking the transience to the unknown. A spirit of its celestial source aware, translating heaven into a human shape, descended into earth's imperfect mold. And then we have this master line, and wept not fallen to mortality. We had those line earlier. A god come down and greater by the fall. Another place Shobindu writes, a godhead greater by the human birth. Why? Because something is accomplished in this matter. Mother says at one place, it is true that every time the divine takes upon a material body, he takes it with one single intention, and it is to transform it. So that's why we see those hints of the yoga of transformation even in the previous literature. Right from Vedic age, every story of the divine advent in some way or the other is trying to mold matter to something greater. Vamana, to mold an animal humanity into humanity with this psychic spark. A totally asuric kind of humanity which is willing to give itself to God, that psychic spark. Then Parshuram, a dwarf humanity awakening to the rush and flow of the rajasic nature, but of a high rajas, not of a low rajas. And Rama, in this matter, awakening in it idealized impulses, sattvic thought. So every time the divine takes a human body, he wants to transform it. Little bit the mold responds, then it collapses again. But the stamp is there, that memory remains. So people can ascend to that state subsequently. It makes it easier for them to recover that, because its stamp is already there in matter. But this time she comes to take it not just one step forward, but to overleap a step. That's what we are told by the divine poet in the previous canto. Nature shall overleap her mortal step. So every time the avatar comes to take it one step forward, but this time it's a radical leap. A leap out of mortality into the immortal state. And wept not fallen to mortality. We have that line from Kabira that Jab jag hasa, Kabir Roya, and it's celebrated in poetry that while everybody was happy, Kabira was unhappy to be born. Why? Because it has once again come into this clay, but she's far greater than the greatest, so she wept not. Why? Because she has come for a conscious birth. She knows why she has come. She has chosen to come here. Why should she weep? She has decided. It's not a helpless dragging into this mortal sphere. We weep, we are unhappy when we are forced to do something. But when we willingly choose, then where is a question of unhappiness? We are happy, rather, because we have come to do a particular work. So here is she, wept not, fallen to mortality, but looked on all with large and tranquil eyes. Mother recounts an incident from her childhood when she was somewhere 3 or 4 or 5, I forget the exact age, but before 5. There is a photograph of her in a studio standing by the chair and hat and all posed up. So she talks about this picture. She says, you know, I was taken to the studio. I was dressed up all in hat and everything and made to stand. So she says, even at that age, I looked all around and found it so ridiculous. If we really look at her eyes, yeah, of course, she is so beautiful at all ages. As a child, one can sense the divinity. Imagine she would have looked at everybody and what is this? Are earthlings like this? posing for a photograph? She said, I could never understand. All this show, all this fuss. What is all this fuss about? So she is posing in that photograph. And what she was feeling, nobody would have known, of course. But now we know, thanks to some disciple who brought out this from her. So she looks on all with large and tranquil eyes, that this is the humanity she is serving. This is the kind of humanity in which I have come to work. What kind of humanity? She describes in the charity bazaar event. When there is a fire which breaks out, then there is a gentleman who is using a stick, was using a, it was, you know, royalty to have a stick, and of course he's a little elderly. So he was using the stick to shoo away everybody so that he could escape in that fire. She says, this is what is gentlemanliness. It breaks down at the first touch of crisis. But she is observing all this humanity through large and tranquil eyes, because she has come to work amidst them. One had returned from the transcendent planes and bore anew the load of mortal breath. She is an adept in these lines. One place, someone asked Mother, Mother, you are saying things which even Upanishadic rishis did not say. She replied, yes, because they did not experience or realize the consciousness that I realized. She said spontaneously. And then she wrote this to Sri Aurobindo. Asked Sri Aurobindo, I gave this reply to that gentleman. She said, yes, you are perfectly right. They did not realize the consciousness which you realized. She had realized all that. She had recovered it as a child. Someone who in France itself, many people are not aware, that she had not only read but translated the Upanishads, the Gita, the Yoga Sutras, and if I am not mistaken, Narad's Bhakti Sutra. She had read all this. She had realized the yoga of the Gita. She was an adept in Buddhist yoga. So all this was obviously the transcendent plane. All these experiences came to her just like that. Like Sri Aurobindo says at one place, I realized Brahman in 3 days. This is what is told, that you know, you can realize it in 3 days. Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa said this. Sri Aurobindo literally realized it in exact 3 days. So he says, I realized the Brahman in 3 days, but it took me 10 years to ascend to the supermind. 10 years, it is such a, it's not an easy ascent. So one had returned from the transcendent planes. She had gone there, she had experienced that, and now she comes back to pursue some task. And bore anew the load of mortal breath. It must have been quite a pain. That's why the mother says in Savitri that 4 things she says. One of them is something like the effort, the mother's adaptation, her attempt to adapt to this world of falsehood and ignorance and error. The experiences of the Divine Mother in her effort to adapt. So first she must adapt to this mortal breath, to this life here, to this matter, which must have been like a strong prison. And what she would have felt, that this prison she cannot escape. She has come to change this prison. This is her yoga. Who had striven of old with our darkness and our pain, she took again her divine unfinished task. This is a colloquy of August and Lopamudra. How long, Lopamudra asked August. How long, we have to dig deep into the subconscious. Divine unfinished task, she comes to reconnect. We are also told that it seems that the square at the samadhi, there is the rectangle side and the square side is Rishi Agastya Yagnavedi. We have of course an August temple here, and it was called as Vedpuri, and there are many similarities. He also crossed the Vindhyas and came here, learned Tamil at that time from none else but Shiva himself. So they have been laboring for this through millenniums, centuries. This time they have taken the unfinished task. The mother asked Sri Aurobindo that, will it be this time? Will it be possible this time? Can it be done this time? Sri Aurobindo says, not only can it be done, it must be done. These were his words. And then she started, because such is the state of humanity in which she came. She asked Shurabindo, can it be done this time? Shurabindo said, not only can it be done, it must be done. It has become a pressing need. So she has come to take her divine unfinished task, survivor of death and the aeonic years. What a marvelous line. Survivor of death. This is not the first time she is meeting the challenge of death. She knows. She will tell death later on that I have come from those plains. Don't give me the lure of heaven. When she is given the lure of heaven, she says, don't give me all this lure. I have come from those plains. In her trance, she would remain perfectly conscious of all the worlds. So she asked Shurabindo, I have never experienced those kind of trance which are described in the classical textbook where one becomes oblivious of the world around. Shurabindo says, that is not the perfect kind of trance. It is a state of unconsciousness. Therefore, when you return back, you don't remember anything. And then he added, nor have I experienced that kind of trance. Even in the supramental consciousness, she would be perfectly conscious. They would communicate in that state. This is a very interesting communication. Mother talks about it when they were on the borders entering into the supramental. And the mother said, such a perfect harmony, wideness, light. All this I see. Shurabindo said, now all this has to be brought down here on earth. There's a communication going on. And the mother describes, immediately I took a plunge. And when I entered back into the body, into the earth, I had the sensation of a pain, almost a material pain, which remained for days. It was a material pain. Because she's coming from that realm back into this mortal body. And she says, you have to bring it down. This is their sacrifice. What we can talk about them? We cannot sometimes one feels to talk about them itself is a blasphemy. It's so, she is so, so far beyond. We can only be grateful and only be happy that it's an exceptional privilege for Earth and humanity that she came here and she is here and they have decided not to leave this Earth till their task is done. That's all one can say. Survivor of death and the aeonic years, once more up with her fathomless heart, she fronted time. Who can know what is there in her heart? What secrets? What she has brought with her? Fathomless heart. Look at the description. Again there was renewed, again revealed, the ancient closeness by earth vision veiled, the secret contact broken off in time, a consanguinity of earth and heaven, between the human portion toiling here, and as yet unborn and limitless force. At one place the mother says that we all have struggled together for this day of victory. And therefore we will share the victory also. We have striven together, age to age, like the Gita. But you all don't remember. We don't remember. But she remembers. We have that letter of Shurabindo to Charu Chandra Dutt. Yes, yes, something to that effect, that he is among the front rank of humanity, whom I was exceptionally, whom I admired very much. But he is one of those with whom I have a distinct feeling that we have fought together the battle of the ages. But in this life, I have not yet been able to call him, probably because I had to do a different kind of work. Battle of the ages. There are people who have fought with them. We all can imagine we were bandaras and bhalus, monkeys and bear in Rama's battle, or the squirrel, or the trees through which he moved, touching every leaf, saying, where is my Sita? Probably we were one of the trees, if not a monkey, whom the Lord touched. Why not if he could step on the stone and turn it into Ahilya's Devi? How about the trees? They were living. We will see, mother had those experiences. So this is the effort. Behind earth, this is the effort going on. And even when we don't see it, there is that prayer of her in the cherry, with the cherry blossom tree. And then she says that every evening when there is a stillness, the being of the tree aspires to go up to heaven and come in contact with it. Imagine, we talk about yoga being done by select few. What else is this but yoga? The tree is aspiring to touch that light which it has lost. Isn't it the same game that goes on within us? Isn't it the same thing that the immortal withdraws from the mortal range and leaves behind a splendid name? This is what happens. The heaven light comes, touches, withdraws, and we yearn. Worship is born, prayer is born, devotion is born by that one act. In the four great events, Shobindu speaks, one of them is Krishna's exile from Vrindavan. What did it do? It created devotion, devotional religion. Before that, there was jnana. The Vedas and Upanishads, there is so much of jnana. But where is that bhakti, that sweetness, that yearning for the divine? Krishna must come to fulfill that need of the earth. So he comes. Seers could not do it. They are aspirants to the light. He comes, touches the earth and goes. Now the earth which has once tasted that sweetness, that delight, it can never be the same again. It will seek it. And perhaps that's the symbol that in Vrindavan there is a place where Ras Leela was supposed to be done. Now the interesting part is, if you go there, you feel it's a great letdown. Because you go there expecting what a delight you will experience. But everything has become like bushes. And we are told that all the gopis and gopas after Shri Krishna left became bushes. And when Krishna comes at night, they again become gopi and they dance, and nobody is expected to stay at night. It is told that somebody came from abroad and stayed there and lost his head. Whatever he saw, he could not tell. Whatever be the truth behind the legend. But my first impression when I saw those bushes was a sense of, what is it? This can't be the Vrindavan. But the next thought that came to my mind, no wonder that which Krishna has left, what would happen to that place? It would be worse than what it would be in its origin. Because that earth will yearn, feel the pang. Another humorous story of Rama. All the monkeys are taking his name, floating the stone. And stone is floating. They are writing on it, Ram, Jai Ram. And stone is floating on the sea. So the Lord is also observing. So the Lord comes at night quietly and puts the stone with his hand. It drowns. He's wondering. He picks up another stone. Again it drowns. He cannot understand the mystery. It seems Lord plays at being ignorant, because the disciples have to, you know, also experience the joy of the Leela. So Hanuman, ever vigilant, is observing the Lord's dilemma. So he says, Lord, what is the problem? He says, I don't understand. They take my name, they write my name and put that stone on the sea and it floats. Now when I am putting it in the sea, it drowns. He says, Hanuman says, perfectly logical. Those whom you leave, what else will happen to them but drown? You are leaving them with your hand, so they are drowning. So this touch of the divine, touching earth and going away, this sense, that is being revealed to us, that once again this task was renewed between the human portion and the divine. She brings with her that limitless force, and both are needed. This also is indicated here. This idea that mother is doing everything, mother will do everything, whatever is happening, mother is doing it. Mother has said it's a hostile suggestion. It's the most convenient excuse to hide into complacency. Whatever is happening, mother is doing. And it's very convenient. But when we have to, you know, fill up the form for our child's admission, then we don't take that attitude. Okay, whatever happens, mother will do. Then we try to find out whom should I meet, where is the possibility of getting anywhere. Then we begin to pray. We don't take that high, complacent, surrendered attitude where mother will do everything. Mother is doing everything. So she says, no, the human portion and the divine come together. Yatha partha dhanurdharo. Jaha yog yogeshwar krishna, where, you know, yog yogeshwar Sri Krishna is there, and where partha dhanurdhar is there. There is victory. It's not just the divine doing all alone. He could do it. Then why the need of an ashram and society and Auroville and so many devotees all over the world? They could have done away with everybody and everything and said, I don't need anyone. But it is needed. The reason is mother has revealed in prayers and meditation. She says, one being, however great he may be, he cannot embody all the elements. This is the limitation. This is the way earth is. So he also at a human level becomes a representative. Maybe a very high representative. Like Sri Krishna says. Even in names among the vibhutis. Talks about his vibhutis. So he can bring certain. But there has to be other corresponding elements which also must come and also must open and become instruments of the divine. So we have this in one line. Shobindo answers so many questions. Mother is doing everything, yes, but there is also the human portion which must open and respond. As he wrote in one of the letters, the divine is not playing with marionettes. It's not a puppet show. So he needs our conscious collaboration. A consanguinity of earth and heaven between the human portion toiling here and an as yet unborn and limitless force. Again the mystic deep attempt began. Again this work of transformation. It's hinted. The Vedas saw it as a far off promise. They speak about it. Then of course the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, this mystic deep attempt. So many stories which indicate it. The daring wager of the cosmic game. This is the adventure of adventures. For since upon this blind and whirling globe, earth plasm first quivered with the illumining mind, and life invaded the material sheath, afflicting in conscience with the need to feel. Since in infinity's silence woke a word, a mother wisdom works in nature's breast to pour delight on the heart of toil and want. This earth was made for transformation. If you look at the history of earth, it is a series of transformations. If we really take the word in the literal sense, it's a change of form. Something new has emerged. Feeling, sense, feeling, thought. And every time that a new element has come, matter has to change to create instrument to hold that. But this is the radical transformation, the radical leap out of the realm of ignorance into, it's a definitive change. Till now there have been successive transformations, but still under the realm of death and ignorance. They have lifted us a little nearer to the gods, to the skies, but not yet the complete leaping over. So here comes the radical attempt. And all this is for what? What a lovely expression. For since upon this blind and whirling globe, earth plasm first quivered with the illumining mind. Since then, what is being prepared? This earth is being prepared for? A mother wisdom works in nature's breast to pour delight on the heart of toil and want, and press perfection on life's stumbling powers, impose heaven's sentience on the obscure abyss, and make dumb matter conscious of its God. Since the very beginning, this is the work of all evolution, is this story, unfinished story, to pour delight. In one of his letters to Dilip Kumar Roy, Shrivindu says that yes, we have come for fulfilling, completing Sri Krishna's work. And what is that work? To bring down love and ananda upon earth. Because out of ananda is creation has emerged. But then he says, but it is our experience that this cannot be done till first truth consciousness establishes itself. Because when our being is impure and Ananda comes down, then that Ananda will change into Pagal Ananda. The whole, you know, mind will break down, all kinds. That is also an Ananda. Others may suffer, but you know, the person is in delight. So all kinds of Ananda, but that true Ananda. And Sri Aurobindo in his yoga, he talks about it. His crown of his experiences, people talk about supramental. He talks about the Ananda coming down on all the seven planes and he describes it. It comes down and touches the mental plane, touches lower, lower, till right into the matter. That delight, for perfection, for truth, for that glory, this earth, this matter has been made to become conscious of its God. Excellent program for the children for school. Although our fallen minds forget to climb. What a great hope. Mother wisdom is working. Now we will say mother wisdom is working. We don't know about it. We don't even know what wisdom there is in cruelty and, you know, events which are so gory, so disturbing. We don't know. I have never felt mother wisdom, one will say. So Sri Aurobindo is giving us a great word of hope. Although our fallen minds forget to climb. We are all like Dumatsena, celestial, losing our celestial kingdom, fallen blind. Simple argument, there is no God because I don't see God. This is the rubbishest of arguments. There is no God because I don't see God. And Vivekananda had a very interesting way to reply to it. He picked up, the great king told him, one king, and he picked up the painting of some great grandfather. And he threw it, you know, there those kings would keep all the Vanshavali. And he put it on the floor and asked all the people to stomp on it, jump on it with their feet. And he said, what are you doing? Disrespect me. He said, what disrespect? Have you seen him? No, no, I have not seen him, but I know him. Is this picture his? No, no, it's a, then why are you bothered? You have not seen him. He doesn't exist. This is a most stupid argument. The limits of our sight is not the limits of light. So even when we are unconscious, still, that light is working. Even when our minds are failing to aspire, still that is working. Although our human stuff resists or breaks, she keeps her will that hopes to divinize clay. Even when it breaks, there's instances in ashram context. We spoke that day of four pillars of immortality. For faith, I was forgetting one name. Interestingly, that the name has occurred to me now. Tirupati. For faith. What happened to Tirupati? He lost his mind. He had to be sent away. And he would want to come here and Sri Aurobindo would say, no, don't come. And eventually he was looked after by all his, you know, relatives. It was of course the Lord's grace. And he gave him everything needed there. But in the process of that light coming down, of course, we have to remember those days when everything is dark. The mother has not yet stepped actively into the forefront and supermind has not yet established itself. Somebody was meant to embody, and it is true that his faith, this man's faith remained unchanged. All, if you read through his story, on one level one wonders. But his faith remained unchanged. Faith in Mother and Sri Aurobindo, I mean, it was an absolute faith. And he was looked after also. So even when our human stuff resists or breaks, we still must know that this journey goes on. Nothing to feel bad about it. She keeps her will that hopes to divinize clay. Failure cannot repress, defeat overthrow. This is the spirit of this yoga. And Sri Aurobindo says that one has to be ready for everything, including the risk of failure. So what? This failure is not permanent. Why? Because his failure is not failure whom God leads. We have been told. It's not permanent. It's a temporary setback. It's a little bit of pause, halting. It's not the end of the story. The soul comes out, takes a new mold, a different humanity springs out of it. We'll continue for 10 minutes and then stop, and we'll not have the break. It'll be like closing session. Although our human stuff resists or breaks, failure cannot repress, defeat overthrow. Time cannot weary her, nor the void subdue. The ages have not made her passionless, No victory, she admits, of death or fate. She says at one of the places, the mother says, they will say that I was very ambitious. But what an ambition to divinize clay. They will say that she was very ambitious. It doesn't matter. She has come armed with that. She does not admit failure. She says, fine, up till this point we come again. Not like our human calculating mind. First it wants to know whether supramentalization has taken place or not. Then step into the yoga. The truth of yoga remains. It is a fact. Today or tomorrow it is bound to take place. It is the destiny bequeathed to earth. Whether this attempt or another attempt, actually this question is irrelevant, whatever be the answer given. If we are still wanting to do it when it is already finished, then it is like somebody wanting the victory without fighting the battle. It doesn't matter. If another attempt, another attempt. Let's join the caravan of the divine army. If this is the work to be done, this alone is worth doing. So this is where, this is the spirit she brings to earth. No victory she admits of death or fate. Always she drives the soul to new attempt. Mother wisdom. And of course, embodied in the Divine Mother. And in all who wake up to this call to divinize clay. Always she drives the soul to new attempt. Always her magical infinitude forces to aspire the inert brute elements. The mother says that one of the signs, among several signs of the psychic awakening, one of them is the urge to progress. Why? Because with it comes this urge. One does not admit defeat. Even in the densest darkness, even when one has slipped, one gets up again, because this soul will not allow. It wants to go further, to lead further. So this is the touch of the Divine Mother. When she touches our human life, there is no question of accepting defeat or accepting something as a close, something as finished, something as the inexorable seal of destiny. There is no such thing. When she is with us, one goes through breaking all boundaries and barriers, wherever one is. So she is like that, forces to aspire till even the body begins to aspire. Again and again the body pulls down the soul from its heights and one feels, oh, I am the same silly monkey that I was. But there is a reason why this happens. This too the supreme diplomat can use. She makes our fall a means to greater rise. She comes unseen. He comes unseen into a darker parts. There veiled by the darkness does his work till these two aspire and will to change. So what she does? When we sink, she sinks with us. This is what she has said. I am with you. When she was asked, Mother, what is meant by I am with you? She says, it means many things. She says, one, there is a special tie between me and all those who have turned to Sri Aurobindo and the Sri Aurobindo. And it doesn't matter wherever they are. They may be very far from Pondicherry on the other side of the globe. But this is a special tie. And it informs me of whatever is happening and she takes care of that. Then she says at another level, when you are in Pondicherry, you cannot live without breathing my atmosphere. Up to 10 kilometers it extends to the lake. Then she says, those who are my disciples, I put a special emanation inside them. And then she says something very interesting. My child, I don't just watch. I sink. When you plunge into darkness, I sink with you. This is the assurance. Why does she sink? She could say, okay, go down, experience. When you have experienced, come back. This is what was done by some yogis. No, she sinks. Why? She says, okay. Even in the darkness, I'll go there and change things. They will also aspire to change. That's why when Arjuna makes all kinds of impossible promises, one such promise is, he has that Devgun, no? He is born from Indra's Ansh. So he many times overshoots his mortal limits. He thinks, and he is right, because in his inner consciousness he carries Indra's element. So he ends up promising to the Brahmin whose four children have died that I'll win them back from death. Of course he's a superhuman being, but death is death. Otherwise I will give myself to fire. This is his standard. And no wonder Krishna has to come now, because how will he do it? So Krishna goes with him, travels with him through the darkness, that whole experience, till he realizes that it is Vishnu who had brought those children. Now this is a very illustrative story. Krishna doesn't tell him, admonish him that time. You fool, you idiot, you did all this, now take the, you know, like human beings will do. You bear the consequences. Krishna says, okay, we have to go through the darkness, it'll be very stifling. What to do? But you're my child, you're my disciple, my devotee. You have stupidly chosen to do it, I will come with you and show you that what is hidden in the darkness and behind the mask of death is none other than Vishnu. This what is the story in a nutshell, though it related in the Purana in the traditional way. So, as one who has all infinity to waste, she scatters the seed of the eternal strength on a half animate and crumbling mold. The mother did not, this adhikar bhed. After a point, all this was lost. Initially, it was there. She would, whoever came toward the end, it's very touching. End is a foolish way of putting it. She says, when somebody asked her mother, family members, all this one, my child, if I could manage, I would have the whole world come and live in Pondicherry. This is 69-70. But my means are limited. Now when you see that time, mother's whole yoga, the way it has evolved, the way her writings from 29, when very, very limited people, photograph is sent, she has to say okay, they have to say okay, and it was very, very strict. Then the first time she allowed an influx is 40s, when the Second Great War. People began to come. Then she says that it was a little premature because we, along with them, we brought in difficulties which we had not yet taken up. But then it's okay. We had to one day or the other take up these difficulties. So they came a little prematurely. She took it. All right. Then when we see later, because he saw that now we cannot accommodate. Supermind has descended. Humanity is being prepared. Then Shorabindo Society, Auroville. And at one point she says that if I could have the whole world here in Pondicherry, but my means are limited physically. So basically the whole concept has changed. In 58 she says after supramental descent, wherever you are, now ashram is no more just a geographical place. Of course it always has that because of the center of radiating central influence. But wherever one is, whoever has declared himself in his consciousness to be a disciple of Shurabindo, who has declared, that house is a house of the ashram. She resides there. We are all interconnected with that subtle link. So here she brings that. She scatters the seed of the eternal strength, not selecting. She's giving. You can take it, take it. If you cannot, your problem. When Satprem once asked mother, people have gone to Tirupati, and it is said that Tirupati God, he gives to anybody who goes there. Whoever goes there, he will give something. Whatever you ask. So the mother thinks about it, it's human language, thinks about it and says, ah, that is very interesting. God will give to anybody and everybody. She says, very interesting. She doesn't remark about it. But later on she says, whoever comes to the samadhi, whoever goes past it, he is bathed in that supramental vibration, even if he is blind, whether he knows it or not, whether he is conscious of it or not. This they are recorded in Munadas conversations in the Supreme. Whoever comes, that's enough. Now look at this, scattering strength, wasting it. Somebody would say, you are wasting on whom? Indeed, one of the persons who came here and meditated, I don't know whether it was one of the gurus, I won't take the name because I may be wrong, but after meditating in the playground and seeing everybody, then when he was asked, this was reported to mother, so mother was asked his impression, and she said, yes, he can meditate, he knows how to meditate and enter into higher realms. So the disciple tells mother that when he was asked what did he feel, he said, she is Jagat Janni, no doubt about it. But the material that is around us is of very inferior, very poor quality. So the mother laughed. She said, yes, obviously he couldn't understand anything. She just remained quiet. What is the game? What is the work? She said, obviously he couldn't understand anything. Why this material? Shubhendu also says, as to the disciples, I agree. When he was asked that it would have been better if you had better disciples like Vivekananda, etc. Shubhendu says, as to the disciples, I agree. But then the problem of humanity, if only people like Vivekananda came, then what about those elements of humanity which are still very dark, obscure? They would not have been represented. And they could not have been, they would not have got the chance to change. So they have to be also given the chance. And then he says something very, very interesting. He says, and if Vivekananda accepted, first of all, whether he will consent or not, that itself is doubtful. But if at all he accepted, who knows if under the pressure of transformation, the ordinary humanity did not show up. Because everybody has a difficult side. In traditional yoga, one does not tackle it. One just mollifies it. So she comes and scatters that strength. Take it. If you can receive it, take it. If you cannot, fine. So open, receive. This is what Shubhendu kept saying. That mother is pouring. Open, receive. Cultivate the strength to receive it. Be plastic. So she scatters. As one who has all infinity to waste, she scatters the seed of the eternal strength on a half-animate and crumbling mold, which is what we all are. Plants heaven's delight in the heart's passionate mire. The only joy we know is the joy of lower vital passions. What she comes, even there she plants heaven's delight. She comes to give that. It doesn't matter who we are, where we are, what errors, mistakes. Pours Godhead's seekings into a bare beast frame. Who has lit the fire of aspiration? That message on 21st February. She says that my child, in one of her prayers, that even in the atom, I light the fire of aspiration, the fire that never dies out. So even aspiration is lit by her for us to rejoice in that mutual union and the delight. Otherwise, by our own efforts, we cannot even aspire. Pours Godhead's seekings into a bare beast frame, hides immortality in a mask of death. So she comes, she has already planned, put that mold inside us, and outwardly events are taking place, but she has hidden that seed of immortality and its blossoming. And we'll close with this one master line because the whole movement changes. Once more, that will put on an earthly shape. So that will which is hidden in the atom, that will which is hidden in the heart of earth, that will which is at once one with wisdom and strength, which is laboring in matter's breast, in the silence of the void called space, behind the appearance of phenomena, behind the restless tramp and noise of things, that will which we do not see, know it not, which is hidden by its own works, that will took on once more a human shape. This is the mother, and so much more.